His affairs were so complicated, spread over so many continents, that even the British taxman must have been daunted. Peter had once skirted this subject with his twin brother, and Stephen had replied quietly, "When a law is patently unjust, such as our tax law is, it's the duty of an honest man to subvert it." Peter's old-fashioned sense of rightness had balked at such logic, but he let it pass. It was strange that it had worked this way for the two brothers, for Peter had always been the brilliant one, and the family had always referred to poor Stephen. Nobody was very surprised when Stephen left Sandhurst, amid dark whispers halfway through his final year. But 2 years later, Stephen was already a millionaire, while Peter was a lowly second lieutenant in the British Army. Peter grinned without rancour at the memory. He had always been particularly fond of his elder brother. But at that moment his train of thought was interrupted as his eye caught the mirror-like finish of the silver limousine parked at the end of the stable yard. It was one of those long Mercedes-Benz, favoured by pop stars, Arab oil men or heads of state. The chauffeur was uniformed in sober navy blue and was busy burnishing the paintwork to an even higher gloss. Even Peter didn't run to that sort of transportation, and Peter felt mildly intrigued. House guests at Abbott's Yew were always interesting. Stephen Stride did not concern himself with those who did not wield either power, wealth, or extraordinary talent. Beyond the Mercedes 600 was parked another smaller model. This one was black, and the two men in it had the hard-closed faces that marked them as bodyguards. Melissa Jane rolled her eyes at the automobile. "Another bloated plutocrat, I expect," she muttered. It was the currently favoured term of extreme disapproval, a great advance on grotty which had preceded it, Peter could not help thinking as he helped his daughter unsaddle, then rub down the horses. They went up through the rose garden, arm in arm, and then laughing together into the main drawing room. "Peter, old boy!" Stephen came to meet him. As tall as his brother, and once he had been as lean, but good living had thickened his body, while at the same time the strains of being a professional deal-maker had greyed his hair at the temples and laced his moustache with silver bristles. His face was not quite a mirror image of Peter's, slightly more fleshy and florid, but the twin resemblance was still strongly marked, and now his face was alive with pleasure.
"Thought you'd broken your bloody neck, what?"
Stephen carefully cultivated the bluff manner of the country squire to shield his quick and shrewd intelligence. Now he turned to Melissa Jane and hugged her with barely a touch of incestuous pleasure.
"How did Florence Nightingale go?"
"She's a darling, Uncle Stephen. I will never be able to thank you."
"Peter, I would like you to meet a very charming lady."
She'd been talking to Patricia Stride, Stephen's wife, and now as she turned, the winter sunshine through the bay windows behind lit her with a soft, romantic aura. Peter felt as though the earth had tilted under his feet, and a fist closed round his ribs, constricting his breathing and inhibiting the action of his heart. He recognised her immediately from the photographs in the official file during the long, drawn-out kidnapping and subsequent murder of her husband. At one stage it had seemed that the kidnappers had crossed the channel with their victim, and Thor had gone to condition Alpha for almost a week. Peter had studied the photographs that had been assembled from a dozen sources, but even the glossy coloured portraits from Vogue and Jour de France had not been able to capture the magnificence of the woman. Surprisingly, he saw his own immediate recognition reflected. There was no change in her expression, but it flared briefly, like dark green emerald fire in her eyes. There was no question in Peter's mind but that she had recognised him, and as he stepped towards her, he realised she was tall, but the fine proportion of her body had not made that immediately apparent. Her skirt was of a fine wool crepe, which moulded the long, stately legs of a dancer.
"Baroness, may I present my brother, General Stride."
"How do you do, General?"
Her English was almost perfect. A low, husky voice, the slight accent very attractive. But she pronounced his rank as three distinct syllables.
Peter, this is Baroness Altman.
Her thick, glossy black hair was scraped back severely from the forehead, with a perfect arrowhead of widow's peak at the centre, emphasising the high Slavic cheekbones and the unblemished perfection of her skin. But her jawline was too square and strong for beauty, and the mouth had an arrogant, determined line to it. Magnificent, but not beautiful, and Peter found himself violently attracted. The breathless, wholesale feeling he had not experienced for 20 years. She seemed to epitomize everything he admired in a woman. Her body was in the condition of a trained athlete. Beneath the oyster silk of her blouse, her arms were delicately sculpted from toned muscle, the waist narrow, the breasts very small and unfettered, their lovely shape pressing clearly through fine material. Her clean, lightly tanned skin glowed with health and careful grooming. All this contributed to his attraction. However, the greater part was in Peter's own mind. He knew she was a woman of extraordinary strength and achievement. That was pure aphrodisiac for him, and she exuded also the challenging air of being unattainable. The regal eyes mocked his evident masculinity with the untouchable aloofness of a queen or a goddess. She seemed to be smiling inwardly, a cool, patronizing smile at his admiration, which she realized was no more than her due. Quickly, Peter reviewed what he knew of her. She had begun her association with the Baron as his private secretary, and in 5 years had become indispensable to him. The Baron had recognized her ability by rapidly elevating her to the boards of directors, first of some of the group's lesser subsidiaries, and finally to that of the central holding company. When the Baron's physical strength had begun to decline in his losing battle with an inexorable cancer, he came to rely more upon her. Trust well placed, as it soon turned out. For she ran the complex empire of heavy industrial companies, of electronics and armaments corporations, of banking and shipping and property developments, like the son he never had. When he married her, he was 58 years of age, almost 30 years her senior, and she had been a perfect wife, as she'd been a perfect business partner. She had assembled and personally delivered the massive ransom demanded by his abductors, against the advice of the French police, going alone and unguarded to a meeting with merciless killers. And when they had returned the Baron's fearfully mutilated corpse to her, she had mourned him and buried him, and continued to run the empire she had inherited, with vision and strength so far beyond her years. She was 29 years old. No, that had been 2 years ago, Peter realized, as he bowed over her hand, not quite touching the smooth, cool fingers with his lips. She would be 31 years old now. She wore a single ring on her wedding finger, a solitaire diamond, not a particularly large diamond, not more than 6 carats, but of such a perfect whiteness and fire that it seemed to be endowed with its own life. It was the choice of a woman of immense wealth and even greater style. As Peter straightened, he realized that she was appraising him as carefully as he was her. It seemed that he would be unable to conceal anything from those slanted emerald eyes. But he returned her gaze steadily, knowing without conceit that he could withstand any such scrutiny. Still intrigued, however, with the certainty that she had known him.
"Your name has been much in the news recently," she said, as if in explanation.
There were 16 for lunch, including Stephen and Pat's 3 children and Melissa Jane. It was a happy, relaxed meal, but the Baroness was seated at a distance that made it impossible for Peter to speak directly to her. And though he strained to follow her conversation, her voice was low and addressed mostly to Stephen and the editor of one of the national daily newspapers who flanked her. Peter found himself fully occupied in fending off the breathless attention of the pretty but feather-brained blonde on his left. She was a starlet who had married well and divorced even better. She had been hand-picked by Pat Stride. Peter's sister-in-law was indefatigable in her efforts to find him a suitable replacement for Cynthia. 12 years of straight failures had not daunted her in the least. There was still time for Peter to notice that though the Baroness sipped once or twice at her wine, the level in the glass never fell, and she picked only lightly at her plate. Though Peter watched her covertly, the Baroness never glanced once in his direction. It was only as they went through for coffee that she came directly and unaffectedly to his side. "Stephen tells me there are Roman ruins on the estate," she said.
"I could show them to you. It's a lovely walk up through the woods."
"Thank you. I do have some business to discuss with Stephen before that. Shall we meet at 3 o'clock? She had changed into a loose tweed skirt and jacket that would have looked bulky on a shorter or plumper woman, and high boots in the same lavender-tinted brown. Under it she wore a cashmere roll-neck jersey and a scarf of the same fine wool hung down her back. A wide-brimmed hat with a bright feather in the band was pulled down over her eyes. She walked in silence, hands thrust deeply into the big pockets of her jacket, making no effort to protect the expensive boots from mud, thorns, or damp bracken. She moved with a flowing, long-legged grace, swinging from the hips so that her shoulder and head seemed to float beside Peter, at not much lower level than his own. Had she not been a world leader in finance and industry, she might have been a great model, he decided. She had a talent for making clothes look important and elegant while treating them with indifference. Peter respected her silence, pleased to be able to step out to match her pace, as they went up through the dark, dripping woods that smelt of leaf mould and cold rain. The oaks, bare and moss-pelted, seemed to beseech a purple-grey sky with arthritic limbs held high. They came out on the higher open ground without having stopped once, although the path had been steep and the ground soft underfoot. She was breathing deeply but evenly, and she had coloured just sufficiently to flatter the high Slavic cheeks. She must be in peak physical condition, he thought. Here they are. Peter indicated the barely discernible grass-covered ditch that circled the hilltop. They're not very impressive, but I didn't want to warn you in advance. She smiled now. I have been here before, she said in that intriguing husky accent. Well, we're off to a flying start. We've both deceived each other at our first meeting, Peter chuckled. I came all the way from Paris, she explained. It was most inconvenient, really. The business I had to discuss with Sir Stephen could have been completed by telephone in 5 minutes. What I had to discuss with you could only be done face by face. She corrected herself immediately. I am sorry. Face to face. It was a rare slip. Stephen had been strangely insistent that Peter spend this particular weekend at Abbot's Yew, and was certainly party to this encounter. I am flattered by the interest of such a beautiful lady. Instantly she frowned, and with a gesture of irritation cut short the compliment as frivolous. Very recently you were approached by the Namco section of Sedler Steel with an offer to head their sales division, she said. And Peter nodded. Since his resignation had been accepted by the War Office, there had been many offers. The terms of employment offered were extraordinarily generous.
That is true.
You prefer the cloistered academic life, perhaps? She asked. And though Peter's expression did not change, he was taken off balance. It seemed impossible that she could know of the offer of the chair of modern military history that he had been offered by a leading American university, an offer with which he was still toying idly. There are some books I want to read and write, Peter said.
Books.
You have an important collection, and I have read those you have written.
You are an interesting contradiction, General Stride.
The man of direct action, and at the same time of deep political and social thought.
I confuse myself at times, Peter smiled.
So what chance do you have to understand me?